And welcome to the Travel Angel Radio Show, Hawaii's only locally produced travel show. And I'm here with my co-host and sponsor, Kathy Takushi, with Captivating Journeys. Aloha, Kathy.
Hi, Cindy. How are you?
Good to see you. And I'm so happy to have our special guest in studio today, Tim Ellison, owner of Polly's. We're going to hear his story about how Kyle, his son, and him started this amazing nonprofit called One Degree Forward, and what they're doing in Cambodia, helping to build schools, homes, and put people through, well, actually changing their lives down there. It's a pretty amazing story. I'm really looking forward to talking to you about that. Kathy, I guess we have to talk in travel news about England.
Yeah, London.
Yeah, you got to wonder if it's going to, do you think that might affect now? I mean, one time, maybe not affect tourism too less, but the third time, who do you think that people are going to think twice? Or have you heard anyone thinking twice about going to England or London now?
Not yet, but I'm sure it will. You know, it's making people a little nervous.
Yeah. Have you had a few people call? You need to hold anyone's hands on their trips?
Not yet. I have a client in London. We have a couple clients in London now, but one's on a cruise and one's, I think, traveling. So far, so good, you know. Mm-hmm. But
well, we know the reality is, I mean, the chances of really it happening to anyone we know is so small, but the fear factor is what is really damaging when there's the fear factor involved.
Yeah,
people get afraid.
I have a client going to Japan tomorrow, and somebody was telling her, are you sure? Is it safe? Because the North Korean guy. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, there's going to be always this fear thing aspect going on, you know. And there's so much of it now, you know, and like it could be anywhere, actually, anywhere in the world. So, I mean, the worst part about terrorism is that it does affect things that you don't want it to affect, like tourism, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to see people not travel. It's the worst thing for countries to have the tourism stopping, right?
Right.
And it's already being impacted by the travel ban, fear, and people's attitude about what's going on with Trump. I mean, tourism is supposedly down, but however, I'm in planning my trip coming up in August, and I'll tell you, the airfare is as high as they ever have been. There is no discounts in sight yet. I keep thinking, well, people are going to get nervous about flying, and they'll bring the prices down. It's not happening.
They got to make up for those tickets they're not selling.
I was like, really? You haven't even dropped the price by a penny? So, I mean, maybe at the last minute after they can't sell it, they will. But it's about leaving August 5th, and
the price
has not come down at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you wait so long and then you go, well, I guess I got to buy it at this price. And you can't. It's like a gamble, right? Because mm-hmm. if you buy it and it comes down, you don't get it's not like a cruise where you can get the money back.
Right.
So something to think about. Plus, you know, there's a lot of people thinking at this time about taking trips. You saw like a big jump towards people doing Japan. There's been more people thinking about doing cruises in Asia that were nervous about things in maybe the Mediterranean or England area.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing people interested in buying now?
Still, Japan is still a request that we're getting. Asia, and of course the Paul Gauguin cruises, because that's pretty safe.
The Paul Gauguin's a great deal.
Yeah, it is.
It's an amazing deal.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to go on the one October 28th. I do want to go on that one. That one is higher than it used to be, but it's still an amazing deal. The Paul Gauguin 7-night cruise, Tahiti and the islands, is how much for a balcony?
It's about $2,500 a person.
$2,500.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a wait because they put it on hold.
They did, mm-hmm. and they just added, and I didn't have a chance to look at it, they did add a couple other dates, and it's a 10-night and an 11-night this year, but
okay.
I have to go back and reread the email because I was running out the door.
Well, you know, I mm-hmm. have to also say still, it's an amazing price. If you go on their website and you look at what it would be if it wasn't the calm iron rate, it's something
it's about half. Yeah, the 7-night is definitely over 10,000.
So, and people are booking this, so mm-hmm. they should call you at 244-1414.
Yes.
244-1414. And if you miss that, it's 244-1414. And don't miss out, because that's what happened last time. people kind of waited. It started kind of sold out. And next thing you know, they didn't book.
They didn't give you any new dates.
Yeah. So there was like this 6-month period where people couldn't get the combine at discount, which is a great deal. So.
Yeah. One of the September dates is there's only, I think, window cabins.
Ooh.
And I think next year those dates are doing pretty well. So I wouldn't wait.
Wow.
If you are thinking about it.
I'm shocked, really. I mean, that's motivation right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't think twice. It's all right. Mm-hmm. Plan your book. Travel insurance, always a good idea, right?
Definitely. Special these days. In addition to what's going on in the world, but you just never know what can happen. And I had a kidney stone a couple weeks ago.
How are you doing with that? That's a
fine.
Nightmare.
It was horrible. Yeah. But if I had gotten it right before I went on my trip, then I would not have gotten on my, I wouldn't have gone because it was like having another baby.
Well, I had a friend having to go to the ER room when I was down there visiting, and the person in the next cubicle over, I could hear talking because they don't have walls, and they were on vacation from Arizona. And indeed, he got a really bad kidney stone in his hotel, came in, and he was in terrible pain. They were giving him morphine.
I had morphine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So
that worked really well.
And I felt so bad for him. Here he is on his vacation, you know, mm-hmm. And you don't plan on a kidney stone on a vacation. I mean, I know when you told me about your kidney stone, I thought, thank God you weren't traveling. And that mm-hmm. would not be a fun thing to have in a long plane flight.
No, no.
Sitting for hours and hours and hours, yeah. Right?
So I had thought about that when I was in the ER. I'm like, this is a reason why you would get, definitely a reason why you get travel insurance, because you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we have to bring up, I'm so adamant about this, about the situation with the threat of making you put your computer in cargo if you're flying back from European countries. And I've been listening, we run Peter Greenberg's show and Rudy Maxa, and both of them, thank bless them, came out exactly as I've been thinking too. Peter Greenberg came up with really very important points. He said, it's ridiculous to put your computer in a cargo hold. We know that lithium batteries can catch fire. Last week, on a flight, a lithium battery in a computer caught fire in the, I think it was a JetBlue, and smoke was coming out, and it was in a carry-on, and it was an overhead bin. And people saw smoke coming out. Well, they were able to get the computer out and put the fire out, and mm-hmm. it was okay. If that had been in a cargo hold, you wouldn't have known that was happening.
Right.
And if you have 300 computers in a cargo hold with lithium batteries, it would be terrible. Peter Greenberg came up with a brilliant solution, because he said this has already been done, because years ago there was a threat. He said the Germans came up with a study to figure out how to solve this problem years ago. It is, you take the computer, you weigh the computer. Computers all computers have a certain X weight. And if the computer doesn't weigh, if it weighs over what the manufacturer statement says, then there's something wrong with the computer. Then there's something else in the mm-hmm. computer besides the computer. He says it takes about 20 seconds. You just put the computer through, you put it on the scale, you weigh it, and if it's fine, it's fine. So I'm just saying, this idea of making people put their computers in cargo hold, Rudy Maxa, Peter Greenberg, you ask anyone, says it's a ridiculous idea, and it might actually stop people flying to Europe and coming back.
Not only the computer, it's the iPads,
and
the
Kindles. Yes,
a lot of people read their books.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know how they're going to do that.
Yeah, and one of the shows I was listening went so far as to say that if the threat was really that credible, they would have already stopped it, and that it's also part of the, you know, one of this particular guest was saying it's part of this ridiculous idea of making people afraid, you know. And I don't think it's a good idea. Bottom line, guys, it's a stupid idea. Ask any person who flies planes. This is not a good idea, especially to put the computer in cargo hold. That said, I mean, that I feel so strongly about, Kathy. I can't even tell you how strongly I feel about that. It would be a nightmare. Mm-hmm. So I hope that I'd be much more worried about flying on a plane with computers in cargo hold than I would flying on any flight with any fear of something happening with an explosion or a terrorist attack. That would be so much higher on my list of things I'd be afraid of.
Yeah.
So folks, wake up. Don't be ridiculous. Don't be stupid. Change that idea. Don't let that ban go through. That would be so stupid. Okay, enough on that. I want to talk to Tim. I've known Tim for years. You've had Polly's 26 years. Polly's in Mukwa. Is it 26 years?
I'll let you do the math, but I bought it in 1991.
Wow.
So that's about 26 years.
And it's one of my favorite Mexican restaurants.
Thank you.
I have to say the best nachos. The best nachos, and I judge a Mexican restaurant by good nachos. But I also love your staff. I've known some of the people, and just a wonderful atmosphere and great food, and it feels like part of the community, right?
Right, exactly. So, and some of the staff have been there when I bought the restaurant.
Really? Seriously?
I think there's Kiana.
Aww.
I said, and Rochelle. Yeah, there's a few of them.
Does Lilia were still
and Lily was
she's
there?
Still there?
Yes, she's there.
Wow.
Still there.
I haven't seen her in a long time.
We all know Polly's, right?
Yeah.
But there's a backstory that's really interesting. Tim made sure that his son Kyle went to Seabury Hall. Seabury Hall is one of the best, no doubt about it. You ask anyone, one of the best schools around. And from that came a lot of interesting things. He went to Seabury Hall. And he decided, actually, after he graduated, did he decide to go traveling, or how did they?
When he was in college, he started doing a lot of traveling. And then when he graduated college, he was doing more traveling. And then he started writing a blog, and that's how he got into the writing business. And I think he's somewhere around 70 countries now that he's gone to.
70 countries is a lot more than me.
Right.
How many countries have you gone to, Kathy? Do you figure?
I don't know.
I was having to do a walk that was a kind of tiresome walk. And I actually started counting countries in my mind while I was walking. And I think I'm up to 37. But 70
he's pretty close to 70.
Wow. That's twice as much as me, and he's half as old as me, at least. So
only Kyle. He went to a wedding last year or the year before in India for one of his college buddies.
Well, those are amazing.
And he made sure that he had a stopover in Bangladesh.
Oh, my God.
Most people would pay extra not to go to Bangladesh.
Exactly.
But he said that was kind of a stretch for him, but it was an interesting experience.
Well, I have to say, and you probably have seen this as well, that the younger generation is a lot more wanting adventure and reality.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of people who travel to escape things, but there is so many people that are backpacking and going to these amazing places. Now, Kyle went to Vietnam first. Was that right?
He's been to Southeast Asia a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny how we started this circuitous, really, on how we started one week forward. Kyle had been there a year before with his fiance, his wife now, Heather, and actually volunteered in an orphanage for a few weeks because
in Vietnam?
In Cambodia.
Oh, in Cambodia.
Yeah, he was in Phnom Penh. And they were there, I think, 3 or 4 weeks. And when they were leaving, what happens a lot, people volunteer to work in an orphanage or something, and then they leave and they go, that's the best 4 weeks of my life. Well, the fact of the matter is you're still leaving these children. They're still in the same dire situation as when you came, more or less. There was a 19-year-old girl there that had grown up in the orphanage. Her name was Moni. And she was volunteering there so she could still live there. And they could see that she was bright, but she could not afford college tuition, which at that time was only, to go to Bill Bright's, the name of the college, $400 a year, which is...
How do you... $400 right. a year? Oh,
but
my gosh.
But when you make $1 or $2 a day, it might as well be $100,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So Kyle didn't have any money. He's just backpacking around with Heather, and he gave her $200 and said, Moni, we'll send you $200 every 6 months. You send us a receipt. We'll send you to college. And that's sort of how we started. And Kyle called me from Vietnam, and he was teasing me, like, you never leave Maui, you know. You should go traveling more. Well, it's hard to leave Maui, you know. It's pretty nice here. And I had started windsurfing after Kyle graduated college. And I really got into windsurfing. I said, Kyle, I wake up, I go windsurfing, go to work. Why do I want to go anywhere? Well, he called me from Vietnam, said he was at a windsurfing beach. And he said, you really should check this out. This is a very popular resort, and it seemed appealing to me. And it was in January is their windy season. It's not our windy season here. So I had this fantasy of, well, maybe I'll go to Vietnam, spend a month or two there in January, February, go windsurfing. Like people come here for the summer and it's like their second home and they windsurf during the summer. So the following year, I go over there. And have you been to Saigon?
No, I want to go.
I have not.
What was it like?
The traffic is insane.
Yeah, is it?
You see those YouTube videos of India and the traffic? It's like Vietnam's like that. It's just like a school of fish, and everybody's beeping their horn. It's beep, 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 beep. I mean, it drives you crazy. It's scary walking across the road. It takes a while to learn how to walk across the road. You have to go at one pace, and you just kind of look, and everyone will go around you. But if you start to run or slow down, you mess up the whole system. But that took me a few days to figure out.
That was like in Cairo. It was like
yeah,
it's just scary.
It's just crazy. So anyway, I made my 5-hour bus ride to this beach resort. It was a beautiful little resort, and it was so inexpensive there. I think I was the high roller because I was spending $45 a night to stay right on the beach.
Wow.
And people, oh, man, you got the big bucks, you know? And but as life would have it, there was no wind, you know, that week. And I didn't really want to wait around. And I felt sorry for people from Europe and different places. I spent thousands of dollars to go there, but it's like coming here, some days it rains, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I'm going back to Hawaii. So I just decided on a whim that I would just travel around. I was by myself. I had no itinerary at all. Didn't know where I was going from day to day. And decided whatever life brings me, I'm just going to accept it, and I won't have a bad day. No matter what happens, it's just part of the journey, basically. And so I went through Vietnam and Laos and Thailand, and I ended up in Cambodia. I took a riverboat up from Chau Duc in Vietnam, came off in Phnom Penh, and this particular person named Pao, who we're real close now, picked me up and took me to a guest house. And the next day I went to, they call it Prison 21. It's a museum there. Real quick history with Pol Pot in the 70s, and he, very hardcore communist, and he took over the country from 75 to 79. And his idea was everybody should be a rice farmer. So anybody that had education or was a teacher or a government worker were executed. Mm-hmm. And he killed 2 million people mm-hmm. over the course of his time. And so when you go into this museum is very somber, and it's an old school. It'd be like going to Baldwin School. They used a school as a torture chamber and a jail, and the downstairs classrooms were all torture chambers, and upstairs they'd cram 100 people into a classroom. And then at night they would put them in trucks and sneak them out about 10 miles out of town, and it was called the Killing Fields, and there's that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it really affected me. And then I was And there's something about when you go see a museum or history, it happened a long time ago, and you can't really relate. But this happened 30 years ago, and the guy I'm talking to lived through it. Mm. And he went into a child's camp from the time he was 6 years old to he was 9 years old. And he said if you complained, they beat you, and if you complained too much, they killed you. And they separated you from your parents because they didn't want your parents to tell you the way things were. So Cambodia's still a big mess, and education system there is terrible. It's getting better, but basically they're starting from scratch all over again. So when I left there, I decided to go see Moni, who Kyle had helped at the orphanage. So I went and I met her, and I think I took her to lunch.
She was in college now?
She started college, but she's still living at that orphanage. And from there, I decided to help Pao. He was the tuk-tuk. We call him tuk-tuk, so the little captains.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really told too many people this, but since we're here, I'll tell you. I was so affected by being at the museum and then going out to the killing fields, and these little kids are begging, and we can talk about you shouldn't really help kids are begging because you find out later they're working for the local mafia or somebody. You know, they should be in school. But I was pretty overwhelmed. And so I was talking to Pao and finding out about his life, and he's got two children, and we're all the same. Basically, he's sending them to school, and one boy loves soccer. And I said, well, how do you make a living? He says, well, I rent this tuk-tuk for $7 a day. And some days I make $10, sometimes I make $5, some days I make $20, you know? And it's just hard to digest all of this when you see so much just devastation and what people had gone through and what this person in front of me had gone through. And I grew up in the Virgin Islands, and while I was talking to him, I just had this idea. And I'm pretty impulsive. So I said, you know, pal, I used to own a motorcycle shop when I was 19 out of high school. I would like to see a motorcycle shop in Phnom Penh. And he was, okay. So we get on this bike. And this is after we've been talking story for about an hour. So we go into Phnom Penh, and he goes into the local Honda shop. And that's what their tuk-tuks are. They're like a little Honda scooter, and they pull a carriage.
Hmm.
And so I went and I looked around and I see there's one for sale there. And I told him, I would like to buy you a new.
Wow.
A motorcycle and a tuk-tuk. So you'll have your own business, set you up in business. And of course, he, like you, went, wow. And couldn't believe it. And when he realized that it was true, his first reaction was, let's call my boss and you can buy this for half price and save money. I mean, it's not like, how much more can I get, but let's how can we save you money? And as soon as I had made that decision to do it, it like cleansed me. It was like I felt so much better, and it was just something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that was right. And it was kind of a jump through a lot of hoops to try to get out of your checking account in Maui and get money to buy something in Cambodia back in, you know, 9 years ago. But it worked out, and we went out and we celebrated at some restaurant, and in those days they actually had the cow hanging on the sidewalk, mm-hmm. and they'd go out there and cut the beef, and it was a little different. But and then I got his children into private school, and he still helps me right now. You saw those scars up there, you know, he'll ship
you
me
have
scars.
Lovely. We just, so we can catch up with people who don't know what we're talking about. At Polly's, you have these beautiful. They're cashmere, aren't they?
Silk scarves.
They're 100%
silk scarves. Silk scarves made in Cambodia.
And lovely colors.
Yeah.
Beautiful shades you don't usually see. They must be hand-dyed.
Right. And Pal's wife picks them all out. And this is, you know, somebody that I just happened to meet. And then she ships them to me, and we sell them, and we use that money.
And the prices are really good.
Oh, yeah. They're very reasonable. It's $25 for a 100% silk scarf.
And your nonprofit is called One Degree Forward.
Correct.
.org, onedegreeforward.org is a nonprofit.
Right.
And so the money from the scarves go towards One Degree
Absolutely.
Forward.
Yeah.
You're spent, okay, so obviously you've already established you're spending money down there. And so you get through this trip, and did you ever stop and think, gosh, what am I doing, or where do I go, or where did it leave you?
Well,
when you
then
were
Kyle
the
and I discussed about it, and Moni at the orphanage said, these are a couple of really bright kids. And if you learn English there in Cambodia, which is interesting, you have a better chance of getting a job and getting ahead. I didn't find that in Vietnam or Thailand mm-hmm. or Laos, but for some reason in Cambodia, it's pretty important to learn English.
Well, because of tourism, probably.
Yeah, but even in business, it's unusual. But so anyway, we decided to take some of the kids that were in the orphanage and send them to school. And that's a whole nother world, orphanages. In Cambodia and other places, some of them are set up for business and kind of exploit kids, and it's very easy to go and be a volunteer at an orphanage or donate money to an orphanage, but they're kind of set up to do that. There's 50% more orphanages there now than there were 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So there's the things we learned as we go along. So our original idea was basically let's provide tuition to needy students that are motivated. And then you know you're giving somebody an education.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had four graduate college now.
Wow.
And Moni, the first one, she's now helps us. She oversees. I'll send her money for tuition. She will go to the school and pay the tuition, check on the grades, make sure everyone's doing okay. And if we have other special projects, and she helps organize those projects. But we have... we helped someone build a school in southern Cambodia in Kep, and then we rebuilt the school. With actually Seabury Hall was a big help.
Really,
they collected $3,000 to $5,000.
Wow!
And we built a school in a village school.
Oh,
this
was
about
amazing.
5 years ago. Put in solar.
And did you go
panel.
Down there to try
oh,
to
yes.
help? Did you know anything about building a home or school
no.
or anything?
I'm pretty good at putting teams together. And so, yeah, I worked with the local people there and found somebody to be in charge. And actually, it was a dilapidated school, so we basically took it down, put in a concrete floor and bamboo walls and a new roof, and then a solar panel, so they had electricity, because there was no electricity in the village. And so over the years, you know, we've kind of done a lot with a little, because everybody's a volunteer. When I fly over there, I use miles. Thank goodness I get a lot of miles buying stuff through the restaurant.
What do you fly? What airlines?
What, Korean Air or United Air, JAL? Yeah, I think it was the last one. Mm-hmm. And
how many times have you been down there now?
I think 7 times.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's a long flight.
So from this one trip, I mean, how in the world could you have ever foreseen or guessed how it would change? It really changed your life.
Yes, and it's changed. It's really changed other people's lives, and that's what's really neat. And the last trip I just went down, we really expanded a little bit. And one of our college graduates out of San Reap, she works for a little NGO now that runs 3 schools, and she came up with the idea to do some wells up in her old village, because they need water wells, they need electricity, they need outhouses. So I said, you know, it's $165 to put a well in to provide somebody water, you know. So I said, let's do that, you know. So I put some money. So when I just came back, I was there for about a month, and we put in 13 wells, and she did a lot of the organizing and lining things up. So when I got there, we were able to move pretty quickly.
So what does it take to build a well out there?
Well, it's 2 guys with by hand. They go down 130 feet with a bar with a handle on it, and they twist it and go down 3 feet, pick it up, and at $8 or $10 a day in 100 degree heat.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said, well, I was asking you before we started, what's a good time of year to go to Cambodia? And you said December through March, was
March,
it?
Yeah. I went 1 year in April. That's when we rebuilt the school.
And
it was 100 plus.
But you just came back.
I came back. I had issues at work, so I generally like to go in January, and I had to stretch it out to March. So I was there for the month of March, actually.
Uh-huh.
And
towards the end of the month, it got that hot?
Starts getting warmer in April, and then in June, it gets into the summertime, and you start getting the rain in the morning, the afternoons, and then September, you get the monsoon season until November.
So you're staying in touch with these people. You basically
Facebook is wonderful.
Where is it on Facebook that people?
Well, I message them, so we can have these different conversations. And one of the boys is doing so well. We actually sent him to college, a university in Thailand, and he is just, his English is fluent. He's now taking 7 courses because he's trying to catch up, because he started mid-year. He had a 4.0 last semester. This semester, he apologized to me because he only had a 3.8 with 7 classes.
Wow.
And he's going to be a rock star. You know, his mother lives in the village, and she was very sick when I first met her. And when I was there last year, when she realized that her son, Sochia, was in college in Thailand, she was so ecstatic and so happy, and she came over to me in Cambodian, just telling me how grateful she was. It gave me chicken skin. And she said, now I can sleep at night because I know my son's going to be okay. Thank you, thank you, thank you for everything you've done.
Well, one thing we have to remember is, number one, we can't, like you said, can't even begin to imagine how their financial situation and their level of living is compared to ours here. You were showing pictures of these people were literally, some of them in little shacks and outhouses, and some not even at outhouses. And as you said, I mean, hardly anything coming in per day. So, I mean, I'm sure it tugs at a lot of people's heartstrings. I have heard stories of other people doing really great things down there as well. We've talked with Tom Vendetti, who does the Angkor Wat Film Festival, and Kayola Beamer. And Jeff Peterson went down not this year. That was this year and the year before. And they brought, I think they brought down 80 ukuleles they bought and gave them to the kids. And nice ones. These were like $180 ukuleles that they got. And they were shocked because they wanted to give them to the kids. And the teacher said, you can't do that. And he said, well, why? We bought them as gifts for the kids. He says, these people make like $1 a day. If you take them, the parents will take. If you give them to the kids, the parents will take those ukuleles, because that would be like what they would make in a year, you know.
Right.
So we have to keep them here at the school so that they don't get stolen from them or sold, you know.
Right.
So, but the kids were so great at learning, even in just the time they have with Keola and Jeff Peterson, that they now have their own little group, and they go out and play in the neighborhoods. One of the two of them have become like, they had a kind of like a halau as well, because they taught them hula. And they're seeing the same thing, that it's really changing people's lives. And there's got to be this some energy, but I know there's another group on Maui also that has gone down and helped build a school down there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing how this connection has developed that really is changing people's lives in Cambodia.
Right.
And who would have guessed that you've gone down there now 7 times?
Right.
So where do you stay when you go down there?
Well, the first year
first of all,
I was,
where's the town? Because we haven't mentioned.
Well, that. Outside San Reap, where that's where Angkor Wat is. But this village is about 30 miles on a dirt road, so it's an hour out. So it's way out in the boonies.
Yeah.
Phnom Penh is where the orphanage in Moni is, and the city there. So we have about 6 children there that we help. And then I met a girl from California that went down there as a volunteer teacher, and just shows you what you can do when you set your mind to it. She had no money, and when I first met her, I found her on Facebook or something. I brought her a big suitcase of school supplies and made a special trip to go see her. And she was living in a little house in a very poor village, and she used one of the front room for a classroom, and she lived in this little kitchen in the back, which is maybe 8 by 8, no electricity, and no running water.
That would be the size of our studio.
Right.
And actually, maybe even a little smaller.
Yeah. And I was kind of taken back.
And
I was
electricity,
staying in $7 a night. Guest houses, you know.
Oh, God.
I moved up a little bit. I'm into the $25 range now. But you can get a nice, comfortable place for $25.
Mm-hmm.
And but now I know people in different places where I stay. And I moved around a lot. I used to take the bus from Phnom Penh to San Reap. It's only 150 miles, but it could take 10 hours.
Oh.
Yeah, they were working on the road. Oh, my gosh. It was like horrible.
Yeah.
So I finally learned to, you get in this mindset of not spending any money because everything's so cheap and money's so, like you said, the ukulele story. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of spending $100 on a plane fare when I could take a $5 bus, it's like, why would I do that?
Oh, no.
I was like, the first time I took the plane, why didn't I do this sooner?
Yeah, right.
I can get a lot done.
Uh-huh.
But so I actually go from southern Cambodia to middle Cambodia to San Reap, and I have projects in each place. But I was going back to Tracy, and Salamanca School is the name of her school that we helped. We actually built one of the buildings there. I think it was about $5,000 that we gave her. And she built, she found a piece of property, raised money, bought a piece of property, and has put 8 concrete buildings on it.
Wow.
And she's doing like a Montessori-type education system there. And
so she's been able to build her own school.
Yeah, it's just incredible. So we help her when we can, and I'll bring her supplies.
For $8,000, she was
that was one classroom. But she probably had a $100,000 budget maybe, but she didn't have a dollar. But she raised it all, and it's created this school. And now the challenge for her is to actually get enough staff and be able to budget it, because she kind of created a monster. Mm-hmm. But we help her when we can. So it's kind of neat to have different projects in different parts of the country and to be able to wisely spend money where you get the most bang for your buck.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we have no administration fees. You know, even when I go there, I pay for my own guest houses and transportation and everything. So when someone donates to us, basically 100% of whatever they do, or they buy a scarf, actually helps somebody, you know.
Which is so important to know. And there's when you know the story and the person
right
behind it, and how much good you're wanting to do and how much the need is.
Right.
I mean, there is such a need there. What we spend on a lunch would be for them a month. You know, what we spend on lunch would be for them a comfortable month, which is hard for us to kind of really get. And you haven't gone back from this. This has been now how many years?
7 to 8 years, yeah.
7 to 8 years.
And I'm already making plans. What's kind of neat, Moni, who has graduated college, She's got herself a decent job. So she's, I mean, she came as poor as you could ever be in her village. And then she was 12 years old. She moved into the orphanage. That's when Kyle met her when she was 19. We sent her to college. She's graduated college. And we also sent her to English school. She's got herself a decent job. She met a husband. They just bought a brand new apartment in a large complex. It's 2,500 units. And it's just this whole different subdivision, let's say. It's huge. But, you know, with flushing toilets, the three bathrooms, two bedrooms. And she never, ever thought she would live in that type of place. Well, now she wants to go back. And our goal for this year is she wants to go back to her original, they call it hometown, their village, and build a school there that will specialize in English and get young children to go to class, to school. Because a lot of young children don't go to class or go to the school if there's even one nearby, because you have to buy the uniform and you have to bribe the teacher.
You have to bribe the teacher?
Yeah, teachers need like 25 cents a week, otherwise they won't give you any attention. And you have to pay $20.
Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Yeah, no,
I've never
sad.
Heard of anything like that anywhere before.
So they're trying to give the teachers more pay so they don't have to. The corruption here is just horrendous.
Wow. I'm sorry, that is so hard for me to even digest that you have to bribe a teacher to give you any attention.
So the children that we send to school, it'd be sending them to like, not Seabury, but a private school compared to their public school, it would be, or St. Anthony's or somewhere. And they don't have that situation there. So we pay a tuition, so they're getting a better education. But Moni's goal now, I just had a meeting with her right before I came back, was she would like to build a school, a two-room schoolhouse in her village. And what a neat circle that is, that she came there from dirt poor, went out and got educated, and now she's going back, and we're going to work on building a school there.
And I'm sure that her family and friends and people who know her are inspired in wanting to do something with their lives as well.
Right.
When they see what can happen is amazing.
Right.
But because, I mean, that's beyond really their imagination as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, just as you couldn't imagine, I'm sure they never could have imagined Moni's story. It's amazing.
Right.
You have some lovely pictures you've taken, which is up on. And if people want to see your Facebook site, what is your Facebook site?
One Degree Forward.
And you also have a website.
Yeah, OneDegreeForward.org.
OneDegreeForward.
When I get my son quit being so busy, he might update it.
Is he here? Is he here on Maui?
Yes, he just came back. So he's
very
busy.
Well, we should have had him come in too, because my gosh, 70 countries, my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, does he ever interact with this whole thing? I mean, he planted the seeds.
And
so
he was working with me more one-on-one with this. And once you have children, his life is kind of went into a different chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And but we just talked about updating the webpage, and he stays in touch with me. And he also stays in touch with Moni and Saw and different people. And I know he wants to go back to Cambodia as soon as the kids get a little bit older.
You know, it's kind of interesting, because I would have guessed, if anything, that you would have maybe wanted to do a restaurant there or something.
No.
I think, it's him to go down there, and he'll want to build a restaurant, Mexican restaurant. But not.
No. I get a lot of satisfaction. It is neat to be able to go down there and just do things without having to worry about permits or this or that.
Have all that, huh?
Well, not out in the village. You need to put in wells. They're very thankful. Let's put in some wells.
Wow.
And one of the houses that I was putting in, I mean, one of the wells we were putting in, you mentioned the straw house.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a family of four living in an 8x8 straw house. And I had this idea. I said, we should build one house for somebody. And so we made agreement with these people. If they send their children to school, we'd rebuild them a house or build them a house.
Mm.
And we built a little 225-square-foot house. So like 15 feet by 20 feet or something. And it was off the ground about 6 feet, and they used downstairs, and we built it in a week.
Wow.
We got a crew together. And Saw, who is like Moni, only she's up in San Reap, she organized it all. It's in her village. And like you said, now the villagers are looking at her going, wow, education really made a difference.
Yep.
You know, she has her own little motorcycle. She dresses nice. She's got a job. She's bringing somebody up here to put in wells. She's organizing the wells. We rebuilt a house in a week. And the family was so grateful.
And there's no rules that kids have to go to school in camp in those areas?
They're not enforced, no.
Oh, my.
I could tell you something about the corruption, and it's getting better. 5 years ago, everybody used to cheat on. They had it'd be like our SATs, mm-hmm. and you have to take a high school final examination. And apparently everybody cheated. They either paid off the teachers or they you'd go by a photocopy store and everybody, you're, hundreds of people are outside copying the test, right?
Oh, my
so God. Everybody would pass. Well, 1 year they said, okay, we're patting everybody down. We're going to have guards and the army. Nobody can cheat. 80% of the country flunked the test.
Oh, no.
I think there was two A's out of 25,000 students.
Oh, no, my gosh.
But they drew the line and said, we got to start somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And so each year it's been getting a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's you can have a lot of ups and downs in the same day. I went with Saw into outside her one of those schools that she works. There's they call it the HIV village, and it's right outside San Reap. Mm. And this poor family about 10 years ago was at a family party and got food poisoning, and they went to the local hospital and they all got injected with an infected needle.
Gosh.
Mm. Aunties and uncles and grandparents and kids and everybody. So now it's a couple hundred people, and they live in these little shanties. So I went and visited there. And the children were so poor, and they're just eating a bowl of rice, and it's lunchtime. And I'm just, that's what gave me the idea to build a house, because I ran into this guy that had diabetes. He was in a wheelchair and just living in like a tarp, just a shanty. Mm. Big smile on his face, though. And so then I leave, and I go to lunch, and I'm sitting at all-you-can-eat buffet, and these busloads of people are driving in, and they're kind of oblivious to what I just saw, mm-hmm. and it's just hard to reconcile that.
How do you reconcile these trips back and forth when you're in that and see that, which has got to be, obviously, it really affected you.
Yeah.
But then you come back and you see all the excess here. What does that do to your psyche?
Oh, it's you definitely go through cultural shock. People think you're going to cultural shock there. You come cultural shock coming back.
Yeah.
I told Tracy, the one that I told you started at school, she's been there 6 or 7 years without coming back.
Mm.
I said, you're going to definitely have to see a therapist or something when you come back.
I mean, that's really, but there is this beautiful dedication. We have about 10 minutes, but we haven't even discussed the whole history and the legacy and the problem of this whole generation that was destroyed and the minefields and what happened there. Because talking about a psyche of a country, I mean, what happened with the minefields and the people crippled and the old generation of men that were just gone, right?
Right, exactly. One of the girls that I, it's interesting, when I was in Vietnam and after I decided to leave the windsurfing and just go traveling, I found a tour guide and said, I want to go to an orphanage because I wanted to be part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, take me to an orphanage. And I want to find out what sort of supplies I need because I don't want to give anybody money because it just disappears. So I told you how crazy the traffic was in Vietnam. So the next thing he took me up to this orphanage and we had to talk to the head of the director of the orphanage, and they needed rice and they needed baby formula and they needed diapers, and you know, we had a long laundry list to do. So I get back in the motorcycle with this Vietnamese driver and nice kid. And he takes me into the local market, and we're driving through all this crazy traffic, and we load up the motorcycle with a couple hundred pounds of rice and boxes, and now I'm driving around, and I have all these boxes and bags of rice and toys for the kids, and go back to the orphanage. And that's kind of how I started my trip. And then every time I went somewhere, I told the tuk-tuk driver, you know, take me to an orphanage. And one of the orphanages that we went to, he said, lineman, I could see this girl was really smart. I mean, this would never happen here. I drive in with a tuk-tuk driver, say I'd like to make a donation and buy supplies for the orphanage, and they pick out two children. They say, go with him in town, and they give them a list, and I drive away with them. And we go into the market, and I could see this one girl was really a good negotiator. She was smart. And so I went back and made arrangements for her to go to English class after her high school. And I said, if she did well, we'll send her to a university. So we now send her to nursing school, and she's, I think, about to go into her fourth year of nursing school.
Wow.
But I asked her what happened to her. Her mother was really poor and like living in a cardboard box or a shanty. And her dad was blind because he had stepped on a landmine.
Wow.
But yeah, she had said, I said, what happened to your dad? And her English wasn't, she said, he went boom.
He went boom.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, huh? And then I found out that's what had happened to him.
I mean, and how many thousands and the ripple effect from all of that?
There was over 2 million, and the country only had 7 million at the time.
Yeah.
So over 2 million people starved to death or were killed in that time.
From, a scarred country. I mean, really. And to do every little bit of this is like really makes a huge, huge difference. And I mean, I hear stories like yours. And I mean, I've known you a long time, Tim, but I didn't know till maybe about 5 years ago you were doing this
right.
work. I remember after a couple of years of you doing this, I heard about it. And I'm going, wow, this is amazing. All of a sudden, one trip.
Right.
And I'm seeing more people want to do things
right.
to help. Do you ever get requests, Kathy, of people saying they want to do a trip and do some to help a nonprofit or help go into an area, maybe do a little work or to help somewhere?
No.
Yeah, because I mean, I know Peter Greenberg on our show.
Yeah.
Peter Greenberg on our show always says, if you're going to go into an area, there are groups there that would love your help. And people who go and work with a group in an area always say how valuable
right.
it is and life-changing, you know.
Right.
So I really do want to encourage people, think if you can take, I mean, look what happened to you. If one person can take one trip and be influenced to do so much good and
right.
really change not only your life but all the people you've helped since then, it's amazing. It can really help change the world. And there is more and more people like your son
right.
doing tourism now like this.
Right.
And going out and really this is where real peace and togetherness and human bonds are made, when people work together as people,
right?
You know, for the good of helping, right?
Absolutely,
And I really hope people, you know, I doubt anyone's going to really go down there and do this in Cambodia, but you do, and as you said, the money from what you do goes, and it does make a difference. It could be as simple, folks, as going in to Polly's and get one of these beautiful scarves. You have all kinds. I see different colors whenever I go in there, right?
Yes.
Get a scarf for $25.
Right.
You know? Or you can go to the website, onestepforward.org.
OneDegreeForward.org.
And One Degree Forward, that's spelled out O-N-E, DegreeForward.org. OneDegreeForward.org. And there's ways there they can contact
Absolutely.
Or make a donation as well.
Right.
And people can be sure that that money is going to help change someone's life. If you think of a person making a dollar a day, if you just gave $25, I mean, that can make a difference.
Well, I think three or four scars would provide a water well for somebody.
Wow.
Somebody that does not have water.
What does it cost to send a child to school?
Well, it depends. We send some kids to English schools. We send some to different colleges. We have anywhere from $500 a year. And then Sochi, who's going in Thailand, he's like $3,000 a year. So I just kind of play it by ear on, you know, how well someone's doing. We have a kid here, Vudi, who is our rock star. He's in the orphanage. And I wish I had a little more time because he's just such an inspiration. Kyle knew him when he was 5 or 6 years old, and the director would only let him go to public school. We wanted to send him to private school. They would let us send him to English classes. And she finally agreed to send him to ninth grade. We'd pay for it. So he flunked the ninth grade test because he'd been going to public school. But they told him he just had to go back to eighth grade for half a year, and then if he passed the test, he'd go on to ninth grade. Well, he took that as an insult, and he told me, Tim, I will try very hard. I will try. I can go to ninth grade. I don't need to go back to eighth grade. And I went and talked to the director and got the correct story from him. Went back to the orphanage. I couldn't find him, and it was kind of funny. And I told all the kids, I said, whoever can find Vudi will get a dollar. And all of a sudden, there were 75 kids, whing, all down the neighborhood, right? And they brought Vudi back to me, you know, and he was determined that he could pass ninth grade. And I drew Vudi a lifeline from 0 to 80. And I said, this is your life and the decision you make today. And it's just this little inch right here on your lifeline will affect the whole rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I went back a grade. It made no difference. I'm still the silly guy I was then. Didn't help me at all. But and I said, but if you don't go in, it'll adversely affect the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. So what do you want to do? And he goes, okay, I'll go back to eighth grade. And so he went back to eighth grade, and he passed a test after, you know, 4 or 5 months. He's now like number two or number one in his class at the private school. And he's going kind of with the middle class students because they can all afford, you know, to pay the tuition. And he's hoping that he can actually get a scholarship to go to Australia.
Wow.
But I told him, if you don't make that, we will support you and send you to university somewhere. But he is so driven, and he's so well. And it's exciting for us to see, and especially Voody, because we've known him since he's 6 or so years old. And now I think he's in 11th grade, and he's really driven.
I mean, I can really tell, Tim, that these kids are like part of your family. It's not like most organizations where you don't even know and someone's just giving money. But
yeah,
this is hands-on, you know, where it makes a difference, you know. And that's really what, I mean, I'm so impressed with your story. I mean, Tim was nervous, Kathy. He said, I don't know if I can talk. I don't like to talk.
And I think you did very
well. I think
well.
You did extremely well. We've been talking for some 50 minutes or so. And it's an amazing story. And I'm so glad. I know you're busy with Paulie's and everything. But, I mean, I can see now where this really means so much to you, how it really has made a difference and how much you care.
Well, it's nice to find out that we all can make a difference. And once you can make a difference, it's effective, you know. It's something you just want to do more of.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I just love your story. Thank you, Tim,
for
coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Next time you're in Paulie's, you know, all know where Paulie's is, upcountry Muckawa, right there on Muckawa Avenue on the corner of Muckawa and Olinda there, and Muckawa Avenue and Olinda, Baldwin goes into Olinda, right there in the corner. Make sure you pick up one of those wonderful scarves or go to onedegreeforward.org and make a little donation. Whatever amount it is, it will make a difference, and you know it's really going to go to help. So, Kathy, I know there's so much to talk about more. We're going to talk some more next week. We're going to have another wonderful guest come in. We love talking stories like this, where travel really does change people's lives, right?
Yeah, that was a really good story.
Yes, it was a good story. It was a good
story. I like
that
story.
And you know what? There are so many people we've had over the years on Maui that are doing people who are doing good things and going out to really help people. People are going to Nepal and making a difference there. I mean, I just get blown away when I hear and see all these stories of people who really are making a difference in the world. So
very inspiring.
Yes. Yeah. And you can contact Kathy Takushi if you're interested in doing any kind of travel, or if you want to jump on board one of those trips to Tahiti, which are selling fast. The number is 244-1414, and your website is?
CaptivatingJourneys.com.
CaptivatingJourneys.com. You can find out about the Paul Gauguin cruises, which are 7-day cruises, really, really affordable and beautiful, beautiful trips. I think there's one, there's the September one's almost sold out, but there's an October as well, and a November as well, right?
And then next year.
And then next year as well. Mm-hmm. And there's some 10 days and some...
There's a 10-night and an 11-night, which I will put up on the website.
Yeah.
When I get back to the office.
And also, as I'm doing too, don't forget, if you're going to travel, you can call Kathy Takushi for travel insurance. It's a good idea in this day and age. Travel insurance, 244-1414 is your number, right?
Correct.
And, oh, by the way, good news, too. I just decided I was going to make the Travel Angel Handbook into an audiobook. So I'm working on doing the parts about relaxation. When I hear all this news about travel and stuff, I figure people really need to have it listened to when they're on the plane. So I'm working on making it an audiobook. So be listening for that. That should be out hopefully within the year, the Travel Angel Handbook on audio. Right now it's a book. You can get it through the travelangel.com, the travelangel.com, my other book. Thank you everyone for listening, and keep traveling, and we'll see you next week right here on Kauai FM.